I do not think.
So what are you getting at?
Guy, blah, blah.
Do you even listen to yourself when you talk?
Hey, we're live! Woohoo!
Turn off your radio before it's too late!
Hated it.
I told you this was a bad idea.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
How important is it to keep all those pieces together for another 3, 4, 5 years?
Well, whatever I can do, you know, in life, you know, the hardest thing is to surround yourself with quality people, even in a marriage, if it's your partner. And then having continuity, getting, life is difficult, especially if you're doing things at a high level. Having continuity, keeping things going, you know, that fact that Tommy and Bill Belichick and my family have been together for 18 years.
So you're, you know, keeping the family together of. Is what you're saying.
And the family. There's a lot of strong-minded people, but when you have something good going, everyone's got to get their egos checked in and try to hold it together.
All right, Falcon, what's going on?
What do you got?
What about the hand? I mean, enough's enough, you know? You got a guy down in Causeway Street played with a punctured lung about 2 years ago in a playoff game. It's embarrassing at this point.
I think Belichick would agree with you.
I agree with Maserati. I mean, you know?
I think this is the way Belichick feels, right?
I'm with Bill on this one. I am. I mean, again, ultimately, look, however it happened, it was a cut. They stitched it up. It was at the base of his thumb. Get out there. It's the NFL. Like, I would expect a baseball player to go on the 60-day DL, for crying out loud. But an NFL guy?
When you think about it in hindsight, Brady's, he is out of character for him to talk about it as much as he did.
Yes, I told you, Murray and I mentioned this yesterday, it felt, he was really open about it.
For him.
For them.
By him and their standards. For him to say anything other than, I was fine, a lot of guys are dealing with stuff, it was fine. For him to say anything beyond that is a sort of a break from protocol. Really.
I mean, on the podium. You know, coach doesn't like us talking about injuries, but just for you guys,
with
this
Nance,
one, yeah. Right? He said it out in the middle of the stadium in front of 75,000 people. Like, I was surprised by that. Again, because I thought especially when you saw the pictures on the web of where the stitches were exactly, what it looked like, stitch them up and get out there. Why is this even a debate?
I think a big part of Belichick's irritation in this is the amount of media leaks that have developed around Brady in the past couple years. Like, how many different reports were there this week? We've seen, even Felger had one, for crying out loud.
That's how bad it's gotten.
Seriously. They're giving them out for like a dime a dozen. But
mine came from a civilian. I'll just say that. But non-football personnel.
But, I mean, we're talking about the same guy who played, I forget what year it was. I think it was 2009. He played with a broken finger, like, the whole year. 2011.
Sports hernias.
He had a broken foot that we didn't know about until he's in Rio de Janeiro dancing in a boot. And then, all of a sudden, this week.
You're right.
Everybody knows what's going on with Tom Brady's hand. I mean, if Belichick is still beholden to what he believes, as far as information and injury information and stuff like that, I'm sure he's pretty ticked off about it.
So was he just annoyed by the injury talk or just the whole Brady thing? Is the whole Brady thing getting annoying to him?
Oh, no, I think it's the Brady thing. Like, you know, again, the commercials, the warrior spirit, the whole nine yards.
The 10-point comebacks in the fourth quarter, the winning the Super Bowl championships?
No, he likes that part of it.
Yeah, I'd say so. Here's Ryan in Springfield. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Felger, you kind of touched on this earlier, but the parallel between 01 and 04, the run that they had there, and the two coordinators leaving at the end, I think people are really underrating that and thinking about what's going to happen after this year. You know, they got to take care of business in a couple weeks, but it really speaks to the continuity and the trust that the players have in these coordinators, and I think people are really underrating that.
So, absolutely. And I just think the adjustments the Patriots made in the second half, which were excellent, especially on defense, those were the ones that stood out. But they had to make, you know, they were getting their asses handed to them in that first half, and they were getting out-coached and out-schemed and everything. And then the second half, they were able to adjust and flip it. Not many teams can do that, but they can. Can they do that as easily next year with Todd Flores as defensive coordinator and Chad?
Ryan!
Well, whoever. That's exactly my point. This Flores kid.
It's amazing.
This Flores kid as defensive coordinator, and something named Chad O'Shea as the offensive coordinator. I say it with all due respect to Chad O'Shea. We're just not, you know. I mean, you think they can just flip the switch like that and get those same sort of adjustments and be dialed in like they were dialed in?
I'd have more concerns on the offensive side of the ball.
I mean, at least you have, I see, I sort of have less because I think you at least have Brady there. But either way, that's just a lot to ask to be able to do that sort of thing. I mean, all these comebacks, all these 60 minutes efforts are, it's because of the coaching staff as much as anything. And now if you're, I don't know, I just think it's, you're whistling past the graveyard. If you think Brian Flores and Chad O'Shea and Bill can whip that up together just like these guys just did. I don't think it works like that.
Well, the last time they had this kind of defection, they went 10 years without a Super Bowl win.
Yeah, and the 05, you know, it's sort of, in 05, I remember what they were all tired because they had played so many games the previous 3 years. And they had lost all those staff members, and it really just sort of caught up to them. And I don't know. I think we whistle past the graveyard a little bit on the staff. Just give Bill all the credit for everything. Like, Patricia had nothing to do with this? I don't know.
I mean, look, you could be right. But as far as the defensive side of the ball, I just don't... they don't do anything exotic. It's not like he's dialing up, like, you know, these crazy overload blitzes at the right time. Like, they just sort of do what they do. And they get more aggressive when the situation dictates it. And, you know, I don't think on the defensive side of the ball it's that big. The offensive side, yes. To me, that's where it is. I think Bill's going to have to help whoever it is, because that's in terms of, okay, what are we seeing on film? How are we going to attack their weaknesses? Like, how do they defense in 3rd and 8 and stuff like that? Like, that, there's a lot of information that goes into that.
I mean, look, you study the particulars of it. To me, no pressure to a lot of pressure for them is a big change. I think that's a big change. And we actually looked up the numbers. I think you were in the hallway during the break. During the first half, they basically, you know, traditional pass rush 13 out of 16 times. More than 80% of the time, they just sent four guys. That's it. In the second half, better than 50% of the time, they blitzed. Better than 50%. The Patriots. Since when? Since when do they bring extra guys?
That was a big adjustment.
Huge. It was a huge adjustment.
Jared in Westwood. Go ahead, Jared.
Hey, Felger. Thanks for taking my call. Just one point and then one quick question for Maz. I'm glad Murray brought up that wheel route play, because when I watched it last night, they could have hit them pretty deep. It was right after Gilmore gave up that play, and I was busy yelling at him. But I'd like to hear Bedard talk a little bit about these linebackers. I agree with Maz, it's a weakness, but it looks like they time up that play because they don't turn around. You see, they had no idea it, too. It's like they're taking a risk on the pass interference. They don't turn at all for recovery.
Quickly, you can throw on the Patriots linebackers, which I want you to talk about, Greg. Yeah. But the one thing that stands out there is that, what are you doing throwing that to Lawrence Fournette?
Well, I totally agree with that.
If you're throwing that to Yeldon or the 30 kid, and again, I'm purposely not going to learn his name.
Grant.
Fournette's not that kind of player. So again, this goes into, while the Patriots coaches got better in the second half, Jacksonville sort of reverted. You don't throw that ball to that player.
I wonder if the Fournette thing was that they were afraid of pass protection, because T.J. Yeldon had already gotten blown up a few times. Grant, I talked to him in the locker room after the game. That kid doesn't know what's going on. I mean, he caught 3 passes during the year. He doesn't play very much. So that was a game plan wrinkle. And, you know, to me, that's the only reason why Fournette was in the game. Because he's bigger, he's sturdier, he's not great in pass protection either. But I think, you know, you look at that, you look at their first down runs, what they were doing, they were just trying to hold it together. I mean, that's who they are at this point. But that, you know, the wheel route, that should have been Grant, it should have been Yeldon. If you're gonna dial something up, it was not a good thrown ball. It should have been, if it's thrown more down the sideline, it's a touchdown. You know, I mean, it was just the Patriots linebackers. I mean, they're fine. I don't have any issues really.
Maz, are they fine?
Oh God, they stink. They're horrendous. Their linebacking core is absolutely positively horrendous.
Talk to Greggy.
Now look, you like Van Noy, and yeah. I don't. Okay, so, I don't think Van Noy is absolutely god-awful, but it feels to me like, you know, and Fournette's a big dude, don't get me wrong, but it feels like they get moved. They get moved, and Roberts in particular.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they need their defensive linemen to take up blockers in front of them, or else they get exposed.
So, but my point is, if you're going to get moved in the run game, then you better be able to cover. And I don't think they can cover.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, these guys, just none of them are fast other than Flowers. He's the only guy that can run. I mean, I wrote this earlier in the year when they were having trouble, you know, covering people. This is about their coverage. Well, yeah. Hang on a second.
Can't run is not an endorsement.
Let me get my thought out, okay? Shush. So I wrote early in the season about you wondered why they weren't playing more man coverage. And it was because Matt Patricia was like, well, if we go man coverage on the corners, our linebackers have to play man coverage. And we don't have anybody that can play man coverage. And so they did a few adjustments as far as, you know, green dogs and holding, you know, the running backs into pass protect, that sort of thing. But they know that's a limitation for them. And, you know, that's just where they are.
And the Jags exploited it. Okay. They did. They exploited it. It was
way for the Eagles.
It's hardly an endorsement of the linebacking corps, Greg, to say they can't run and that they have to cover things to, you know, to avoid getting exploited. I think
that's not their fault.
You're actually agreeing with Maz. Of course it's their fault. They have crappy linebackers.
I'm talking about the linebackers themselves.
Oh, no, the players are the players. Right. Yeah, you're just as God made you. Yes, you're a crappy football player, and I guess it's not their fault.
Yeah, no, I don't blame the players for the
fact
that
like you were crapping on Roberts and Van Noy, and I was just saying it's not their fault. I mean,
it's not their fault that they suck?
They don't suck.
It's not their fault they can't run?
No. Okay. That's the Patriots' fault for putting them out there, if that's what they're asking them to do.
Greg, their linebacking corps is bad. It's a bad linebacking core.
It's not a strength.
Let's do 10 questions with Greg Bedard. I think we got him. I think we got him to come around there, Maz. Not that you would know it, but I think it actually did happen.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub. No one says it like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you nuts?
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub. You want the answer? You've got to ask the question.
Do you have an opinion based on if you had to go with your gut, which way it would go?
Sometimes you have to ask it over and over and over again.
Why?
This is 10 Questions with Greg Bedard and Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Worst case scenario.
Very good, Murray. Sound good. My point is, shut up, Rondo. You suck.
I get no issue with Rondo's comment because he's right.
Yeah, on this one, I would shut up if I were him. No one wants you.
I wouldn't.
No one.
Good for him.
Okay, a little squabbling.
Coaches make a point of it, and coaches make a point of it.
Very good, Doug. Thank you. That guy's some urgency. Blah, blah. Sorry. Blah, 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 blah. It's Paul Pierce about his video. You were right, Maz.
Thank you.
It doesn't happen often.
Boo!
That's Maz doing background vocals on Sunshine Day last week.
The ghost of Tom Coughlin.
Yes.
Off his hands!
That's Sosi on the Cook's drop.
15.9. Quarterback rating of 15.9 for Brian Hoyer. 15.9.
In case you didn't hear it the first time, is that it? Just roll them in. They're all good.
Off his hands!
Number 10, among the new coaching hires, what is the best fit? What has the greatest chance for success?
McDaniels and Indy. Second time around, he's got Andrew Luck. Just really needs to get the defense figured out in the offensive line, and I think they can have some pretty good success.
To me, it's one of those two offensive coordinators, McDaniels or Shermer with the Giants.
Okay, so I got McDaniels as well. I got McDaniels, but on the other one, Maz, that actually leads to the next question, Jimmy.
Worst case scenario.
What's the worst fit? The least chance for success?
I think it's Nagy in Chicago.
Your guy.
Well, yeah, but I said that he'd be in the mix. I didn't say he should get a job. I mean, just to me, he hasn't had enough time as an offensive coordinator. He wasn't even calling the plays till like the last month of the season. It almost smells of like Joe Philbin in Miami. Like just somebody who's not ready yet.
Steve Wilks in Arizona.
Who the hell is that?
Yep. Yeah. Arizona Cardinals. Enjoy 2018 in oblivion because that's where you're playing. You're going to suck.
Okay, I hate the Pat Shermer hire. I hate it. And he did good work in Minnesota. I mean, you can't deny that. But where I come from it is, you're the New York Giants, man. You just hired Ben McAdoo, Bob McAdoo. You just hired McAdoo. Like, come on. Parcells, Coughlin. This is who you are. This is who you should be. You're still a very talented team, and you're going to be developing this next quarterback. You know, it's Pat Shermer's first head coaching gig, right? Like, enough of the first-time head coaches. Bring in a guy. Bring in someone real. Saban, Harbaugh, whatever the case may be. Even McDaniels I feel better about down there. You're the New York Giants. Start acting like it. That's why I just don't like the name quality and the lack of experience, frankly. Another first-time head coach. What are you doing?
Second time.
Pat Shermer was a head coach?
Cleveland, briefly.
For how long?
That doesn't count.
One or two seasons.
Was he an interim or a head coach?
No, he was head coach.
I take it back then. Ish. Does it really count?
He was Holmgren hired him.
If you're the coach of the Cleveland Browns for a season or two?
I actually think it could work there. I think they get some players, and if he get that out of Case Keenum, even Eli, if they keep Eli.
He's a lot like McDaniels. He was kind of an a-hole his first time around, and he's learned a lot.
All right, I forgot the Cleveland thing, or I never knew it. I just want a name there. Like, you know, get a real guy.
Nick Saban.
Yes. Next.
Coaches make a point of it, and coaches make a point of
it. Thank you, Doug. Number 8. This is more a question for Murray. It feels more up his alley. But the Patriots are going to wear white in the Super Bowl. They had the option. They are 3-1 in the Super Bowl wearing white. What are they wearing blue, Maz?
2-2.
They're 2-2 wearing blue, 3-1 wearing white. They went white. How do you feel about that?
Give me the white. White under the Belichick-Brady era. They can't lose. Give me the white.
Didn't they lose to the Giants in 2011?
Wrong. Blue.
So what was the loss in?
I think it was the...
It was the Packers.
It was the... Yeah.
That doesn't count.
No. Under Belichick, they're 3-0
and
white.
Okay, that's what I thought. You guys kept saying 3-1.
Yeah, count all the Super Bowls, Mike.
Okay, well, what were they in...
You've gone so many.
Were they in red against the Bears?
I believe they were. So
yeah,
that one's
right.
Not on the
Pat
list.
The Patriot,
yeah,
okay. Baby.
Yeah.
So,
I'd wear blue in this game. I like blue.
What? No.
Discuss.
I like blue. I
no,
like
because
blue.
Outside of them winning the first Super Bowl, since then, it's been a disaster when they wear blue. Those two Giants losses. Burn the blue ones in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
give me the white.
I don't give a rat's ass about the superstition. The blue jerseys are way better than the white ones.
I don't like that they went white because that's what... It's sort of a cockamamie thing like your wife would do. Well, what color are they wearing? Since when are they... Like, I don't like that they're playing into the superstition. You see what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't
matter.
I'm
glad that they are. They are.
They shouldn't be. They're too good to play into the superstition.
Well, plus the other thing is I like the Eagles better in green. That's bad. That's a bad combo for me. I love those green Eagles jerseys.
So this is just purely aesthetic.
Oh, yeah. No, the Eagles look... I love the dark jersey in general in the NFL. The white jersey, yeah, you can have it.
Okay, next.
Boo!
That was the weirdest set of backup vocals ever, Maz. Number 7, what is the worst, or maybe just your least favorite, fan base in the NFL?
I think now it might have to be the Chiefs. They've just been annoying over the years, and their constant defense of Alex Smith, you know, just gets to... And it seems like they have no memory. Like, they forget, you know, the previous 15 years when you've gone out 5-0, 6-0, and then flamed out and choked in the playoffs.
I mean, this is what I should have clarified the question. Other than Patriots fans, in your opinion, what is the worst or your least favorite fan base in America?
Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Murray.
Eagles. You just had two of these people punch police horses. You have animal abuse going on? I'm supposed to say that these people are all right? You punching police horses? Burn in hell. Philadelphia Eagles fans.
He's right. They punched horses. They did. They punched horses.
Mongo.
I went Dallas. Oh, come on, please. Dallas will always be the worst at their core. You haven't won anything in 20 years. Shut up.
Okay, Philadelphia sports fans in general are the worst. Toothless hooligans. I mean, just brutal. Violent.
Toothless.
Toothless Neanderthals, okay? But the actual football... Steeler fans, to me. Steeler fans are just... They're one step above the Eagle fan in the evolutionary scale. Their knuckles are just barely above the ground. They're dragging on the ground, too. And they have all this... You know, they won, right? They won so much that they also have this arrogance. So this arrogance on top of this massive stupidity, it's just a horrible blend.
Why would we ever fire Mike Tomlin? We never fire anybody.
Steeler fans for me. My point is, shut up, Rondo. You suck.
I get no issue with Rondo's comment because he's right.
Yeah, on this one I would shut up if I were him. No one wants you.
I wouldn't.
No one.
Good for him.
Number 6. Speaking of Jacksonville, or I'm sorry, Philly fans, what was your worst memory or experience from Super Bowl 39 in Jacksonville?
I was not there, but, you know, just watching at home the whole McNabb stuff down the stretch.
Yeah, I wasn't in Jacksonville either.
Oh,
but
you guys weren't there?
No. I thought of all the Super Bowl games, that one has been the biggest dog.
Were you there, Murray?
No, I wasn't.
So none of you have interacted with these Eagles fans?
I've heard nothing but that this was pure hell, though.
Oh, it was a joke? Oh, it's the only football game I've been to where I felt like I might get hit over the back of the head with a metal chair. Like, seriously, there's that undercurrent of violence with the Philly fan that you get with no other fan base. Not even the Steeler fan. The Steeler fan is just a goober. But there's no... And the Cowboy fan is just obnoxious. The Philly fan, there is actually like that little bit of tension, that little bit of
threatening. There could be a brick under this guy's jersey.
Yeah, am I going to get whacked?
Yeah.
You know, and when I turn around, I mean, they're going to hit me over the back of the head with something. And so it's just menacing. I just... there's just a menacing quality to them. And this, as I said, you know, in Jacksonville, at least we were outdoors the whole weekend. They had that big open, again, you weren't there, so that, you know, they had this big open riverfront area so you could, like, you could flee. If there were Eagles fans coming your way, you could run to the other side of the street, you could run across the park, you could escape.
Swim across the river.
In Minnesota, I've tried to tell you this, in Minneapolis, it's like a gerbil habitat. There's all skywalks and tunnels, and you are inside all the time, and malls, and you're walking through tunnels and, like, skywalks to get to all these places. There's nowhere to go. You're all going to be cooped up with these Eagles fans.
There were going to be some brawls in there.
Oh, it's just brutal. Oh, it's bad. I'm sorry. We're late. Go, go, go. You were right, Maz.
Thank you.
Who's the biggest tool bag Eagle player of all time?
This one's easy. Can't spell tool bag without T-O.
Yeah, I considered him. I went Herm Edwards. Herm Edwards right up there. Tool.
Workout wonder Mike Mamula.
Mike Mamula, that's a great one. Next.
Off his hands!
Number four, if you could take one player off the Eagles roster right now and put him on the Patriots, who would it be? Who do you want?
Fletcher Cox.
Fletcher
Dude
Cox.
Is awesome.
I went Brandon Graham, defensive end. I want somebody on that defense, though. I don't need any of their offensive players.
And
I did consider Alshon Jeffrey, however.
Cox is, and what does he do?
He's a defensive end, defensive tackle sort of tweener, but he does it all. He rush, pass, whatever.
Worst case scenario.
Number three, who should Mike Vrabel bring in as offensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans?
I liked the report about Ryan Day, who used to
Who's that?
He used to be Chip Kelly's guy. He was a UNH quarterback, was at BC, really smart. They need to run some sort of scheme like that.
I deferred on this question. I can't, unless it's Josh McDaniels or, you know, someone like that. I don't know where you go.
The only reason I asked this is because on set of the NBC Sports pregame show, I asked Charlie Weiss, has your phone been ringing with all these coaching hires? He says, yes, it's been ringing more than usual.
He and says that every offseason. I'm just saying.
So you're going to take a steaming dump on what I'm about to say. That's
it's
fine.
Okay.
I'm just telling you. This is why I asked the question. Then I ask him, are you just considering coordinator jobs? He says, well, no, not necessarily. I said, well, would you consider coming back and coaching quarterbacks? He says, right situation, right players, you know, I would consider it. And that's all he would tell me. But I think, I don't know, would Charlie Weiss coaching Marcus Mariota make any sense to you?
That's a lot of work to do there in Tennessee.
Because I don't trust Vrabel. I mean, I think Vrabel... a smart kid and, you know, good guy with a good future and all that. But
yep. He can bark in the middle of a room, but as far as...
Is he going to coach up a quarterback or scheme an offense?
No.
No way. So he needs someone. I would watch Charlie Weiss to Tennessee. That's all I'm saying to you.
Coaches make a point of it, and coaches make a point of it.
Thank you, Doug Marone. Scale of 1 to 10. Minneapolis as a city ranks what?
A 7 during the summer. Like a 1 during the winter. I mean, I've been there for... I went and watched, I think, Red Sox Twins at the stadium there. And
doing situational ratings now with
yes,
the city.
Yes, exactly. But it's... In the summer, when you can actually venture outside, Minneapolis is really nice. They got great restaurants. I really like it.
6. It's a 6. It's not a complete dud. It's got a little bit of an underbelly there that's pretty good. It's a 6.
Someone showed Maz their breasts once in Minnesota, and so now he loves Minneapolis.
It was dynamite. Seriously.
She just lifted her shirt and showed you her cans.
Oh, yeah, no. And she, you know, it was a full experience, too. There was all kinds of touching allowed. It was great.
What?
Yeah, I'll tell you later.
And it wasn't at a strip club. It was at a bar.
No, it was at a bar. Yeah, I think it was called the Gay 90s.
So are you sure this was a she?
Oh, no, it was definitely a she.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
Oh, no, she was a she. Yeah, no, she was a she.
Is Wiggy going to do the love boat again
no,
when we're out
no,
there?
No, this was many years ago.
I said this before about Minneapolis. It is a cosmopolitan city. People don't realize. Like,
yes.
It's big and there's stuff to do and there's, like, good restaurants
it's a big downtown.
It's a big downtown. It's not a cow town.
No.
It's not. But there's something off about the people in Minnesota. There is. So I'm from the Midwest and I feel there's a certain hardiness to Milwaukee, Chicago. There's a certain character to Detroit. And, like, there's just sort of a hardiness that exists in the Midwest. Where in Minneapolis, it sort of ends. I feel like that people take themselves a little too seriously. Like they got to stick up their keister, or there's just something off about those folks in Minnesota. I can't put my finger on it. But
you're right. It's not as Midwest-y as the other.
You know what
place.
I mean?
Yes.
Like so.
Exactly
at the end of the day,
correct.
I don't like it.
Off his hands.
Final question. Give me your Super Bowl MVP power rankings. In other words, most likely to win the Super Bowl MVP. Brady's obviously one. Who would you have number 2, 3, and 4?
Foles, Amendola, Gronk, and Fletcher Cox.
Foles, Gronk, Ajayi, Dion Lewis.
Okay, take an awful lot for a defensive player to win the MVP. Awful lot. Last one was Tampa Bay.
He's awesome.
Okay, if he's that good, put it on the board.
Felger and Maz.
This is Felger.
The man is beholden to no one.
And Mass.
I don't really know what to expect.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
White the single back with Brady up under center. He takes the snap. He play fakes to White. He looks down the middle. He fires and the ball is caught in the back of the end zone by Danny.
It's a catch.
Amendola. Touchdown. Patriots.
It's a catch.
He made the grab just inside the end line. And New England has taken the lead.
I love Tom Brady. Man, Danny, playoff Amendola, so money on his drive. But the composure of the quarterback, down and tight, Amendola elevates 1 foot.
What a catch.
Two foot down. Oh, my
left
God.
Foot toe tap in the back of the end zone.
Clutch.
Yeah, guys, thanks for your call, my call. On the injury last Wednesday when it first came out, it was reported that he banged his finger on the guy's helmet, his chin strap, and then it's 10, 12, 14 stitches. But yeah. The other thing is, why can't we get good announcers like Gil Santos and...
Okay, Sosa and Zoe are great. I don't want to talk about the announcers.
They are good. I listen to them during the game. I think they're great.
Zoe's excellent.
Yes.
They're both excellent.
You know, other than the whole... He goes overboard with the penalties.
I think the penalties is Zoe's soft spot. Yes.
Especially with Gronk.
Yes, and his Gronk thing is a thing. But they're excellent. And Zoe's insights into the game are tremendous.
They are, totally.
I mean, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, he sees things no one else sees, and he calls things out before they happen. Like, he's excellent. The injury, I'm again, just reading this SI article. It is just, again, the information coming out from the Brady camp on this stuff, it has to be Brady's side. Bill and the football people aren't giving this out. So, you know, details about the injury and how it happened and, you know, what was thought and how Brian Hoyer believed he might play right up until Sunday. You know, Brady wore a splint fashioned for the thumb and met throughout the week with his body coach, Alex Guerrero. Doesn't mention anything about a meeting with Jim Whalen or any of the Patriots trainers, does it? Says, so he met throughout the week with his body coach, Alex Guerrero. So again, that tells you it's coming from Brady's side. They make sure to get Alex a plug in there. Alex Guerrero, who prescribed a compression sleeve made from the same material as Brady's often mocked recovery pajamas, to be worn 24/7. The injury was serious enough at first that backup Brian Hoyer believed he might play right up until Sunday. But by the time Brady practiced on Friday, throwing the ball well and deep, those closest to him had been rid of all doubt. I mean, so it's just, again, the details there coming out. And this is a point that Greg made before. It's like, this isn't usual. Usually Brady shows up at a golf tournament in March or April, and then we find out about the injury. Like, he's letting it be known, and Bill is pushing back for whatever reason, right?
That's what it seems like. I mean, I don't exactly know what's going on, but it just seems very odd that there's so many reports about Brady's injuries, and then, you know, it seems like this was a very serious injury, and, you know, certainly Brady admitted that on Wednesday he wasn't sure whether he was going to play, and he's talking about, oh, handoff is going to end my season, and Belichick is just like,
it ain't open heart surgery.
Hangnail.
Yeah. Anthony and Hingham. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I just want to talk about Cooks, but after hearing that Brady stuff you were just talking about, the Brady and Guerrero, he thinks Guerrero's like made him the player that he is. It's Belichick made him the player that he is, not Guerrero. Like, I mean, oh, I know.
I would tend to agree. You're driving me nuts with your phone! You hear the fumbling around with the damn phone?
Fiddles over there.
God! But maybe that's the whole thing. That's part of the whole ego thing that Kraft was talking about. Where, you know, Bill's looking at Guerrero and Brady is saying, like, Tom, where do you really think this is coming from? Like, is it the pajamas or the things that we work on Tuesday and the game plans that we'd like, you know, this is part of the frustration?
Yeah, look, I think that this whole thing with Brady's out of control. I mean, it is. And I'm talking about Brady's whole, you know, aura. Like, this whole thing adds to the Brady legend. The Brady, you know, I want to say myth because it's not a myth. But the you know, look at how this thing was glamorized in this story. This injury, he had a cut. He had a cut. Like, think of how the perception of the injury is altered just by this story. I mean, you could simply say, at the end of the day, whatever happened, he had a cut on his hand and they stitched it up.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can describe it the way that Bishop did in this story, which makes it sound like he underwent some sort of massive trauma. Like, to me, that's a huge, huge gap.
The other takeaway here, again, is that, and I don't think we've mentioned this yet, that his wife, Giselle, in fact, encouraged him to retire. This is according to Jay Feely. This is Jay Feely does the kicking commentary. He's the kicking reporter on some of these games. It feels like a little bit, little much to me, but anyway, he's...
They have a kicking commentator, but not an officiating commentator.
Good point by you. And he's a buddy with Brady from their days at Michigan. They went to college at Michigan together. This being Brady, writes Greg Bishop, Feely prefers not to disclose the locale, but he does share that Brady's wife, the supermodel Giselle Bundchen, spent time on that trip trying to get me to convince Tom to stop playing. And, Feely adds, she was dead serious. Feely says he looked at his friend and told him, play as long as you can. Brady smiled back and winked.
Hey, big guy.
So, how do you feel about that? I mean, that's no revelation. You could tell that from 100 miles away that Giselle doesn't want... What wife wants her husband continuing to get his brains beat in?
Well, now you know why he shows up at 8:30 in the morning for a 3 o'clock game. And all this season, why is Brady out in the field by himself? Because it's probably the only time where he doesn't hear, yap, 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 yap. Get away from football. Get away from football. Tom, I stopped watching. Stop playing. No more playing. Stop playing. Shut up.
Tom!
Shut up. Just some peace and quiet in the damn football field. We don't have to hear anything and nonstop. Where are you going to stop playing? We have the kids. Are you going to stop playing? At some point, you're going to stop playing. Shut up. I'm at the best. Please.
Tom!
This is how I earn a living. Stop playing. You have to stop playing. Can I stop playing? Just peace and quiet. That's all I want, lady. That's all I want. Most of us, regular guys, we have to hide in the bathroom. Tom, he goes to the football field.
Or golf.
Right.
That's why most guys golf. They get out of the effing house.
Ski during the winter, snowmobile, and any of that stuff.
Just get a fish.
Why do you always have to go? I don't understand why you don't like. Don't you want to spend more time with me? No. I'm around you too damn much. Like starting up a lawnmower. Tom, you're going to stop? You're going to stop playing football? No. I'm not. Enough, lady. Now you have your answer. A lot of people, Mike Reese, everybody else, all the beat writers. Why is Tom here so early? Why is Tom by himself out in the football field? I don't understand it. He's never done this. He's had enough. Stop talking, Giselle.
Our long commercial-free segment comes your way next, everybody.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a hypocrite.
Wow.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
For the first time in 13 years, the Eagles are headed for the Super Bowl and a rematch with the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 52.
Mel Reese, pack your bags. We're going to Minneapolis.
I think it's going to be a really good game. I think it's going to go down to the wire. And like you said the other day, I thought it was a great point. They need to be ready to play 60 minutes.
Their best 5 minutes have to be the last five.
You're absolutely correct.
Or else they will lose.
They should have an entire different package for the... It used to be, and I think the Jaguars did this, and we've seen this at times with some of the teams that have given the Patriots trouble. They'll have two different game plans, first half, second half. And because you know the Patriots are going to adjust at halftime, and you need to anticipate that.
You got it.
We've seen that in the past from a few teams. Like the Jets have done things like defensively. They'll do different things first half, second half. I think the Eagles need to do the same sort of thing, and I think they also need to have a plan for 5 minutes. Like, look, you're... Just practice all week this week that you are going to be down. Brady's going to come down and score with about 90 seconds left, 60 seconds. Like, start practicing because it's going
to
happen.
All of you, coaches, don't use your timeouts unless you have to. Practice or prepare yourself not to burn timeouts in the third quarter. Take the 5-yard delay if you have to, but more importantly, just have the play ready to go. Don't burn time. I mean, all of it. Like, all of it. They have to be dialed in on all of those things because the Patriots are. And I don't know how you prepare for all of it, but that's how the Patriots have won all their big games recently, by doing everything right at the end.
If I'm Philly, I'd feel pretty good about the offensive side of the ball. I think they got good matchups there. Peterson's, by all accounts, a good play caller. He's getting all kinds of praise for that. You know, what I worry about is the other side. Because honestly, I think Schwartz could screw this up, Greg. Now, look, he's getting a lot of credit, too, for the aggressiveness, the calling, all of it. I think if they're too aggressive against the Patriots, they could really run into some problems.
I agree. Jim Schwartz is one of these guys. He certainly has a hefty ego, and I think he could go into this game thinking, I can write my own ticket off this game. I'm going to show how smart I am.
Absolutely.
That sort of thing, and
he
then it blows
guy.
Up in his face. He is. You know, I mean, but he also is very good at what he does. So, you know, I think that the whole Chiefs influence, Andy Reid, the game planning with Peterson, I think is a big factor. 2 weeks to game plan for this game. The Patriots know they're going to see a lot of different stuff in this game. and they're going to have to be prepared for it, and they're going to have to adjust and all that stuff.
If you want to say it just doesn't, you know, so easy to say Foles is the wild card, right? If you want to say it's not just Foles, Greg, what's it about? What's the key to the game outside of Foles?
I think, you know, when you go against the Patriots, at some point in time, they're going to move the ball by using their quick, short passing game. You know, Amendola, the running back, stuff like that. How are you going to cover that? How are you going to tackle them? Because you know, Brady's not going to take seven-step drops and launch the ball down the field the whole time. I mean, they'll do that at times because that's where the coverage dictates him going with the ball. But for them to move the ball, they're going to come back to their short, quick passing game, getting the ball out, not exposing the offensive line. How are you going to deal with that? Because that's where Rex Ryan was always good, you know, muddying the middle of the field, the short area of the field, making Brady clutch the ball a little bit more. How can you do that? Because that's really going to be the name of the game.
Does Philly have the defensive personnel to do what you need to do against the Patriots, you know, including the thing you're talking about?
I'm not sure. I mean, I need to do a lot more studying on them. But I think, you know, their cornerbacks, I thought it was a really good move. Howie Roseman has done a great job, the GM, at the moves he did in this offseason. Getting Darby from Buffalo, I think, was huge for them. I wonder about their cornerbacks against the Patriots. And I think, you know, the Jenkins-Gronkowski matchup is just a phenomenal matchup.
Again,
it's that
Jenkins,
type of
Jenkins is?
He's the strong safety for the Eagles. He's a veteran. He's been around. He can run. He can tackle. He's a lot like, who's the Chiefs safety?
Eric Berry.
He's a lot like him. Maybe not quite as fast, but the same type of player. And he's given Gronk issues. There's only a select number of safeties that can give Gronk issues, or at least moderately slow him up. Jenkins is one of those guys.
I want to know about the Philly linebackers. It feels to me the defensive line's dynamite. Feels to me like their secondary's pretty good, but their linebackers I don't know anything about, just like I did in Jacksonville, and I underestimated Jacksonville's linebackers. But if you're talking about the short middle of the field, then you better have linebackers that can run and tackle.
The Jaguars' linebackers definitely run better than the Eagles' guys. But Kendricks is, you know, he's a good runner. Bradham is a good athlete. Their middle linebacker, though, when they're in base, and I think you could see the Patriots use a lot of base personnel to exploit this, is, you know, the Ellerby, who used to be on the Dolphins. He's not that good. Keep him on the field. A lot of, you know, multiple tight ends, two running backs. I think that gives the Patriots a little bit more of an edge matchup-wise.
All right, Greggy. We'll see you next Tuesday in the food court.
Yep.
Okay? So, Greg,
Chinese food or
Greg
what?
Bedard, I like the... like the little bourbon chicken, the
Panda,
Cajun place?
Mm-hmm. Panda Express.
Yeah, something like that.
Place is nailed.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going some sort of sushi or Japanese.
Okay, Bedard next week from the Super Bowl. No commercials, a headline. And we come back, we continue. Patriots, Jaguars, we continue with this question. The Patriots being back here again in the Super Bowl, that good or bad for the league? Good or bad for the NFL? We discuss again, no spots here.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.